From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 16th, 2021. Hey, your Milwaukee Brewers are at home this weekend with the Pirates. And after a couple of long road trips, the Bucks are at the Forum all of this coming week. Let's start with a trip back to grade school. 10 tourists were stuck in India. They were walking in a forbidden area against lockdown and social distancing rules. Their punishment for this transgression was to write 500 times, "I did not follow the rules of lockdown, and I am very sorry." Apparently, my Catholic grade school nun is the enforcer of these rules. Here's a dilemma. It turns out you're more likely to get a computer virus from a religious website than you are from a pornographic website. There's not much I can add to that and still keep our license. Here's the question of the day. What are the odds this couple will stay together? Every day the wife would make and pack a healthy lunch for her husband. The unappreciative jerk would sell his lunch at work and use the money to buy fast food, and then he'd pocket the change. I make the over-under on that couple at 3 months. And finally, a Tennessee man trying on pants in a Walmart. And right away, you know, this isn't going to end well. Well, wouldn't you know it, he shot himself in the leg. It happened when he dropped his pants to the floor and forgot he had a gun in his back pocket. So it probably could have been worse. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Max. A good week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 1.1% this week, closing at the bell at 14,052. The S&P 500 up 1.4% this week, closing at 41.86. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1.2% for the week, closing today at 34,203. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 9.2%. The S&P 500 now up 11.9%. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average a robust 12.3% for the year. The yield on the 10-year Treasury moved a bit lower this week, finishing the week at 1.57%. And that's a quick look at the week for the markets. You know, Brian, maybe just a place to start this week. You know, I think it just feels like stocks are just finding ways each week to move higher. It feels like no matter what little bits of bad news come out, there's enough good news, enough positive reinforcement for stock prices to just keep pushing things higher. The S&P keeps reclaiming new highs, keeps pushing into that new high territory. And so, you know, certainly as you talk to clients, there's plenty to be happy about. The reverse of that, I think, is that, you know, when things are as robust as they are, we're planning ahead, right? We're saying, okay, now's the time we trim a little, we get a little cash in your portfolio if you're going to need it. And so I think, you know, as you talk to clients, what are you talking about in terms of opportunities given where stocks are right now?
Well, Kyle, first, I think we should call this Feel Good Friday because we're right in the sweet spot of a bunch of different things. You know, while there remain some concerns about COVID and, you know, we're hopefully pretty obviously closer to the end than the beginning, and things seem to be pushing forward even with a few obstacles along the way. But now you see the economy coming back. You know, corporate earnings news this week, especially in banking, has been, you know, just to the degree we had expectations, we've even exceeded those expectations. Joel, you're going to have a field day today. A lot of really good news on the economic front, a lot of reassuring stuff there. Things that maybe we have worried a little bit about in the last few weeks, like say interest rates, the 10-year treasury. Well, you know, we've dropped back 20 basis points or whatnot in the last couple of weeks, so we feel a bit better about that. The inflation news, you know, a lot of people are worried about something spiking, but even that's been somewhat, I think we're in a pretty comfortable place there for now too. So, you know, yeah, we could kind of look forward a bunch. We could talk a little bit about valuations and what might happen around the corner. But I think as we look at things right now, you really got to feel good about kind of this uptick in the economy and what we're going to see for the next few months. I think in terms of markets and opportunities, the growth side sprung back the last couple of weeks after kind of the value play has done well for the last few months. So you're seeing some broadness in the market in terms of what's going on here. But I do think there are still pockets of place. I mean, there pretty much always is pockets of places where you can do some buying and feel comfortable. But overall, what's not to like right now, you know?
You know, I think as we entered the first quarter, the expectation for earnings was on a year-over-year basis, we'd add about 16% over last year's first quarter. Obviously, last year's first quarter, a bit of a rough quarter because the pandemic started. But, you know, I think 16% was still a pretty decent number. And as we now have finished the first quarter, gotten into the actual earnings releases, we're about 10% into that. We're now talking about earnings growth year over year for the first quarter, north of 30%. And so nearly doubling kind of what our expectation was. And that doesn't happen, simply because we underestimated. It happens because things are going better than what we thought. That's both in terms of, how quickly consumers have been spending because they have more cash in their pockets, but also when you look at banks as kind of the first wave of earnings we saw, the ability to begin to bring some cash back on the balance sheets that they had reserved for writing down bad debt. The banks now think that the vast majority of the worst is behind us when you look at how they're getting things back into the balance sheet. All that money that they had set aside for bad loans, they set aside more than enough. Certainly, we saw a couple of weeks ago, banks back on for dividend increases and share buybacks. And now seeing in their earnings report that, a lot of those bad loans they had accounted for didn't quite go as bad as they thought. I think, that tells you everything you need to know about where we were. The second part of this, though, is I think the more important part, and that is kind of what the expectation is going forward. And it seems like every week that goes by, we're adding 50 cents or a dollar to the forecast for what full year earnings look like. And so, I think I get the question often, as I'm sure Mike and Brian, you do as well, aren't stocks getting a little expensive? I think stocks were a little expensive. And the wonderful thing, because earnings forecasts have improved, is they haven't gotten more expensive. They've stayed roughly where they are, which is atypical in a market that's risen as much as it has. And so, I'm another week of encouraging news in our belts. I think, as you rightfully point out, it's a Friday that we should be pretty happy that the markets are closed as high as they are. But I think, there's some good reasons for that support.
Kyle, I think part of it now becomes, the market looks forward. We talk about that all the time. But now the question becomes, how far forward are we going to look? You have Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan talking about this thing carrying on into 23 now. And you're like, what kind of prices do I have to have today to support, growth through 2023? And, the math gets a little obscure when you get out that far. But I think, kind of my point for the day is I think for at least the next few months, it's going to be a pretty good ride unless something pops out that we don't, that we don't know, that we don't expect. And, well, there'll be plenty of time to look around the corner and see where this thing may stumble, but we're in a pretty sweet spot right now, and maybe we just ought to enjoy it for a little while, So,
yeah, and I think the wonderful thing is, we've been talking about the U.S., we've been talking about stimulus spending here in the U.S., and not every country around the world benefiting that, but we got news this week on China growing at 18% in the first quarter year over year economic growth. Not quite as robust when you look at, quarter to quarter changes, because the fourth quarter last year was pretty strong for them. But, you look at the opportunities and, Mike, I know you're talking to clients all the time about, how we invest right now. Clearly, as you look at the world, there's more than just the U.S. we should be thinking about, whether it's from a pure valuation perspective or whether it's just diversifying risk a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a lot of clients that have mentioned the kind of the international space when it comes to investing lately, just because they don't hear about it much, right? Like when you turn on your TV, a lot of it is about the US and US stocks and stuff like that. So I've had some good conversations with people about international. Some are scared off to do it because of things they've heard, and others are encouraged about it because of things they've heard. So you kind of have to balance it out and tell them that having a good part of having a healthy piece of international stocks in your portfolio is the way to stay balanced. but you just got, you know, is it growth? Is it value? But the key is to be much more broad-based, because obviously outside of the U.S. is the world. So you don't just want to limit yourself to one sector within that international space.
Well, and I love to point out, right, that, you know, if you're a U.S. investor investing in large U.S. corporations, you're investing in the world, because there are users all over the world that use Facebook or Amazon or Google. But at the same time, there are aspects of international investing that you can't simply capture by just buying a U.S. multinational company. And so for investors who truly want to diversify their exposure, as I think all investors should, right? You don't just buy one thing and hope that's the thing that works out. Certainly the U.S. has been the place to be for quite a while. But when you look at where valuations are right now, when you look at how much better dividend yields tend to be outside the U.S. versus inside the U.S., I think there's pretty significant opportunity to be adding there right now. Add in the fact that the dollar has remained relatively expensive compared to many currencies outside the U.S., many non-dollar currencies. I think that also provides some opportunity for international investors. And so, you know, I think we talk about, you know, what's the right amount. It probably isn't as simple as saying, well, you should be, you know, 20% in non-US or 10% or whatever the number is. I think it's whatever you had right now, you might be willing to put a little more there just given where the opportunities are.
Well, I think too, so much of it's not predicting the future. You know, we talk about that all the time. Sometimes it's just assessing where you are in the environment and figuring out what's a better opportunity. And I'm not saying cheap is always a good answer, but you know, if you raise valuations as an issue, Kyle, and you look across the globe, and there are some opportunities where stocks are cheaper, and you think there's some underlying reason why, you know, there may be some tailwinds, you know, why wouldn't you invest over there? You know, the dollar as a percent of, as a stabilizing force in the world right now is at a lower percentage as a reserve currency than it's been in quite some time. So you know, I don't know that the U.S. dollar is going to lose its place in the world as the currency of choice. But I do think you always got to keep those things in the back of your mind and use those as little opportunities or little clues or little signposts along the way to say, well, maybe it would be a good idea to diversify myself against some of those potential risks, you know. And when you start to put some of those factors together and you say, well, maybe this is a little cheaper and maybe there's a little more room for growth. And maybe if the dollar does this, that, or the other thing, there are better opportunities overseas. And I think you take advantage of those opportunities to put some of your money where your mouth is. And that's how you build a diversified portfolio over time.
Well, and let's remember that as U.S. investors, we have risks that are specific to the U.S. economy and to U.S. businesses. And so it makes sense that at least relative to the U.S.'s, you know, percentage or allocation on the global stage, we'd be a little over allocated to the U.S. within our portfolios. That's true whether you're from the U.K. or Australia or the U.S., right? No matter where you live in the world, you tend to allocate more to your country than what kind of the global allocation would suggest, in part because you understand it better, in part because the risks to your portfolio may be a bit more specific to your home country. And we call that home country bias. But at the same time, you know, I do think you've got to lean into some of those opportunities. And we may still be at a place right now where, as you look outside the U.S., those opportunities look a little more attractive. You know, Joel, as we look at some of the economic data, you know, I think the big one this week was retail sales data. Certainly a ton of other stuff out there. But as we look at retail sales, you know, seeing a huge uptick in bar and restaurant spending, you know, obviously sporting goods, clothing, the kind of things that, you know, people spend money on when they have more money to spend. You know, that's kind of the trend that we've seen now this last month with the retail sales data.
Yeah, Kyle, we had all sorts of great things, you know, feeding into those retail sales. We had stimulus payments to a lot of families. We had more places opening up as far as bars and restaurants are concerned. We had spring break. So there was actually spending on, you know, travel, you know, more than we've seen in a while because of a lockdown and, you know, concerns about the coronavirus. So there was a lot going on. The retail sales went up 9.8% from February to March. That's a big amount just for 1 month. And year to year, that was up 27, almost 28%. And again, that, you know, we're comparing now back to when everything was shut down. So when you're looking at things like sporting goods and clothing sales, you know, they're way up compared to a year ago, but the trend's in the right direction. And when we're starting to see things, you know, like sporting goods were up 73% from a year ago. Clothing and accessories were up 100, you know, doubled the sales from March of 2020. And, again, things were really kind of shut down a year ago. But also remember that just before the pandemic, the economy wasn't that bad. You know, we were almost 11 years into an economic growth spurt, the longest in history. So when we're starting to compare now and we're seeing things, you know, sales and other numbers that are back above where they were before the pandemic, those are pretty good signs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, clearly we can lean on some of the stimulus checks as a reason for that, but it isn't strictly limited to stimulus spending. A lot of it is also just pent up demand, right? That, you know, you had kids that didn't play soccer last summer who want to play soccer this spring and this summer. Well, you're going to go out and buy new shin guards and a new soccer ball and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think we're going to see that with travel the further along we go. We're going to continue to see it with restaurants and certainly with hotels and that and those kinds of things. And Mike, I know as you look at and talk to friends and clients, you know, you've shared with me before, you know, you've got a friend that manages a bar and they're having trouble even staffing sometimes just to keep up with some of the new demand they're seeing.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking. I know someone who owns a bar. He owns his bar and he's seen that they're starting to get back to normal. More and more people are coming out spending and they're having to really pick up with the pace at which they staff with. And the other thing it's kind of ties into it with the bar and restaurant spending that I've been talking to people is I think more people are looking forward to not so much spending on things, but things to do with the people they haven't seen in a year. Right. Like I'll just give you a little example. I talked to a client today. They're out in Seattle visiting their daughter and granddaughter who they've never met before. Right. So they shot out there the first chance they could get. I am going to see my cousins this weekend at a beer garden. Don't judge me. I'm there for the giant pretzels. But it's just one of those things that like people are looking to spend more on the things to do with people. Right. And that ties into what I talked to my friend who owns the bar about. He's seen more instead of just two or four person kind of groups coming in, six or eight, you know, the people that have all been vaccinated because they all want to get together. And he thinks that's going to be more of kind of the trend going forward this, you know, the rest of this year. And for the people that can spend, they are going to spend on doing stuff like that.
And Kyle, you mentioned hiring. That's one of the things that we still have to be concerned about because we're, you know, the unemployment claims, the new initial unemployment claims are still way above, you know, they're like triple what they were before the recession, before the pandemic hit, but they're the lowest they've been in a year. So they're going in the right direction. And, you know, in particular, leisure and hospitality, you know, we're still, I mean, they're the bulk of the 8.4 million jobs that we don't have that we had a year ago. And there was a report that came out today by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. And they were looking at actually that because a lot of times in recessions, when people lose their jobs, they'll go to some place that has better prospects or, you know, that's going to pay them better or, you know, guarantee more security. And they're not seeing that. They're not seeing a lot of movement so far from people who are still waiting to be rehired from leisure and hospitality, from restaurants and bars and hotels and travel agencies. Those people are still presumably sticking around and hoping that things open up enough again that they're employed.
You know, I think you guys, for the next few months, we're going to have a blast. But I do think it's going to be fascinating when you get beyond that to see how this all shakes out. You know, and we're talking about you know, service and leisure stuff, Mike, like going to the bar and everything, you know, will we 2 years from now go back from the eight guys, you know, walking in the front door back to three or four? You know, I mean, my daughter just got a job yesterday. She lives in San Francisco. She took a job in Denver. She's didn't do it right from her house. Like, so you think about the movement of labor and accessibility to new jobs and stuff that's changing. Freddie Mac said today that we're short 3.8 million houses in this country based on demand. And yet, you know, if interest rates go up, is that going to hurt, you know, hurt the housing market? And or are we going to build a bajillion more houses every year? I think as this plays out and kind of the old idea of pent up demand and supply starts to settle in, you know, where are we going to need what? You know, how can we supply those things? Where it all shakes out, I think, is going to be fascinating. You know, even talking about China's good news this week in terms of growth, they're already suggesting that may have peaked and it's on the other way. So, you know, in the Chinese news, they're already kind of peeking around the corner and kind of figuring out where that's all going to shake out. So, yeah, a lot of great stuff. I think we're going to have fun the next few months. And it'll be fascinating, I think, you know, for a guy that's done this as long as I have, to see how things shake out over the next few years.
Well, an immense opportunity, I think, as we look at that, right? That as you look at what does it mean to try to solve those supply and demand problems, I think it means that you're going to see drastic productivity improvements that drives earnings. I think you're going to see meaningful shifts in the labor force that we're not nearly beginning to anticipate yet, but that at some point in time, you know, you see those travel and leisure workers who all of a sudden 6 months, a year from now, realize that the only way they're going to get back to work is if they can retrain in another field. You know, I think we could be in for a pretty serious, phase of economic growth. The one concern as we try to get to that point, right, is what does that mean for inflation? And, you know, Joel, as you look at the inflation data that we had this week, it isn't really a concern yet outside of, you know, some of the oil numbers, some of the maybe, you know, things that tend to be a bit more volatile in the first place.
Right, Kyle. Gasoline prices, for instance, you know, were accounted for half of the increase in the consumer price index in March. So there's something right there that's transitory or transient or temporary. But we are seeing more prices go up. We've been talking about the housing expansion and how, you know, there haven't been enough houses for the demand of people who want to get houses. So they're building more houses now. We had numbers on that today, and you know, we're back at 14-year highs for housing starts and building permits. But they're running into cost problems because now the higher prices for houses are being passed along because they need more timber, and there's more competition for that. And you know, that affects the cost of toilet paper, which Brian brought up on last week's show, because you know, you're getting the same, you're getting products from wood. And so there is that whole effect. Now the Fed came out with its beige book this week. It, you know, has an anecdotal account of all sorts of things all over the country. And they noted that in there, that there are signs of prices going up, but again, it's not anything to be alarmed about yet. We also had this week the Fed numbers on capacity utilization, which shows how much of the nation's industries are being used for actually producing stuff. And it's still way below the long-term average. We haven't hit the long-term average since April of 2008. So that's another sign that inflation isn't really in the pipeline right now.
You know, Kyle, I want to kind of bounce off something you said earlier too. I think that even if you get to the point where you say a few months out or a year or two out, that it isn't what, you know, it isn't what the market's priced in right now. And there may be some disappointments along the way. I think for whatever reason, I think it's fair to say that we've been through an unusually disruptive period of time, and not just because of COVID, but because of innovation, because of, you know, people's preferences to move to, you know, clean energy or whatever it might be. And I think whatever happens down the road, it's important to remember most days there's opportunities somewhere. And I think the economy may be one where there's winners and losers. Now, when you add it all up, maybe it is or isn't what we think it's going to be. But I think no matter what happens, there's so much stuff going on right now that if we're careful and we choose properly and we take advantage of those opportunities that are out there, I think we're going to be able to do just fine. You know, it's the last few years have been so much, you know, the market's up and the market's down and everybody wins and everybody loses. And it may be different than that in the future, but there will be opportunities based on, I think, all the creation, you know, of new technology and stuff that's going on now. So,
yeah, such a good point, Brian. You know, we look at this stuff on a weekly basis. We're on the podcast every Friday talking about the economic data that just happened and talking about the earnings release from this quarter. And yeah, all of that supports stocks where they are right now. But I think, you know, the other part of that conversation, kind of what does the future bring us and where is the opportunity in that? That's the part that's almost more interesting, the part that for investors almost provides a little more hope, right? That, yeah, there's broadly speaking some support right now, but if you could get past just looking at today and next week and really get to, you know, where are the opportunities 3, 5, 10 years down the road, that's, I think, where, you know, as investors, we can really start to make a difference in, you know, what the opportunities are for our portfolio. Well, as always, we enjoy doing the show. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.